We have a really special experience in store for you today right here at Decatur City Church Online. We're going to talk about a few of the challenges that we're all facing right now. We're going to hear some incredible music together, and we're going to get to hear from one of our local authors, Wendy Nunnery, in just a few minutes. But first... Running through CVS, I've got a mask on, I've got my hat pulled down low, I'm trying not to touch anything other than the 2 months worth of allergy medicine that I actually came in to get, when all of a sudden, it happens. That's when I see somebody that I, well, sort of know. And of course, I feel obliged to ask, I mean, how are you? Or even more likely right now, how are you holding up these days? And honestly, most of you, you know the right answer without having to even think about it, right? Instinctively, you just pick up on this dance that we're engaged in, and usually the response is out of your mouth before your mind even processes the question. Good, you say. I mean, things are fine. Or if you're in an especially revealing mood, not too bad. And then, well, then we both move on and we continue with our day. Truthfully, it all happened so fast that we never really stopped moving in the first place. Now, what's even worse is usually I ask other people how they've been without any real expectation of an honest answer. It's just such a habit for me that most of the time I forget to care about the answer. And more importantly, I forget to care about the person behind the answer. And all of that may be perfectly fine when I'm getting groceries and I just pass another soccer parent that I've only met once or twice. It actually probably is an appropriate level of disclosure. But you know what is unfortunate? I've started letting this ritual worm its way into most of my relationships. Even those relationships that are supposed to go beneath the surface and that are supposed to affect my life for the better. Now, I think there are a number of reasons why we do this, and not all of them are bad. I mean, we're busy people, and not every moment is the best moment to share those deep down disappointments. But some of the reasons we do this, well, some of the reasons we do this are problematic. I mean, for instance, sometimes we compare ourselves to others and we start to feel guilty for not being okay. I mean, after all, we think, I still have a job and my spouse or my kids are healthy, so I should be good, right? When really, really we're not good. Or maybe we do this because there's still a bit of a cultural stigma attached to admitting that we're not always fine. Even right now, I mean, even in the midst of a time when so many of our lives have been uprooted by the health challenges and economic uncertainty of a pandemic. And in these circumstances, well, in these circumstances, simply saying, I'm fine, it doesn't help me much. I mean, sure, I get to seem honest without actually being vulnerable. And I get to experience the proximity of closeness without any risk, but I miss out on a lot too. I miss out on any chance of experiencing a real substantive relationship. And simply asking, how you been, without expecting an honest answer, yeah, it allows me to act invested in the lives of people around me. But without the sacrifices of time and attention that real relationships require, I won't ever get to really experience authentic community. Now, here's the thing. When we take an honest inventory of our lives right now, I think most of us probably really would say that we're doing okay. I mean, if you're like me, you've been fortunate enough to remain physically healthy, and you're probably even enjoying the opportunity to have a little more time with your family. I bet you're certainly enjoying a work schedule that doesn't require that classic Atlanta commute. But then, well, then there's the other side of all this as well. We're all navigating a steady stream of deflating news while juggling so many new responsibilities. I mean, perhaps you've had to say goodbye to a friend or a family member. Maybe you've agonized over how you're going to manage childcare now. Or maybe you're just finding all of your relationships stressed by the politics of a pandemic. And that's not even to mention the fact that an unprecedented number of people are currently out of work and trying to pick up the pieces of dreams that had seemed so secure only a few months ago. I mean, it's okay to admit that any of this would be a lot for one person to handle, much less every one of us all at the same time. So it's no surprise that more and more people are reporting that they're not exactly okay. I mean, from international health organizations all the way down to local counselors and clinics, survey data indicates that the past 6 months, well, they've been among the most stressful times that any of us can ever remember. But you know what I find interesting about the advice I've seen in nearly every piece that's been compiled by people who study mental health and who study the strategies for building resilience? They all start by emphasizing the necessity of sharing our actual messy feelings with people we trust. In fact, the CDC website is explicitly encouraging people to stay connected with their faith communities despite the challenges of social distancing. Because while it so often feels like something we have to just push through alone, the truth is, especially in times like this, almost everybody is not okay in some way or another.
You had enough of these.
we all get this. We are all not okay sometimes. So today we're going to dive into one simple strategy for managing the not okay. And then next week we're going to come back and we're going to look at another strategy that's just as helpful. But of course, I think it's probably really important to admit up front that simple, well, simple is not synonymous with easy. Still, I think if we can get into the habit of applying this strategy and the one that we're going to discuss next week, we may just discover a path to not only survive the seasons that pose the most intense challenges to our mental health, but also I think we may experience more growth in a shorter period of time than we ever have before. So here we go. Let's dive in. The first strategy that we're going to unpack today is simply this. We have to be honest with God. But can you and I be honest for a minute? As hard as it is for me to break the cycle of telling other people that I'm fine, it can be way harder for me to break the cycle of telling God I'm fine. I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but I mean, have you ever felt the pressure to please God? Like, especially in your prayers when you're talking to Him. There's this deep twinge that tells you that if you phrase things just right, or that if you strike the perfect balance between boldness and humility, that you can get God to answer your prayers. I mean, where does that come from? It can feel a bit like an exercise in casting a spell, doesn't it? I mean, for me, it kind of goes like this. A prayer may sound like this. Hey, God, like, I know you said I could cast my cares on you. So I want to, you know that it'd be like really cool if I got this job. But I also want to add the caveat that, like, if it's not your will, I mean, I'm okay with that too, because, I mean, I guess I have to be because you're God. So really what I'm trying to say, God, is that I'm fine. Like, I'm fine with whatever you have for me. In fact, I'm so fine that, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe you could reward me with something really awesome in line with my desires. But again, like, just want to underline extreme humility over here. Acceptance, totally up to you. Just want to make sure we're clear before I sign off. Now, would we want our spouses to communicate with us like that? I mean, wouldn't it be weird, like, if our kids talked to us that way? Yet, it's how we talk to God all the time. Well, I think we find a good example of how to avoid this kind of dance in the life and the writings of David. David, the Hebrew scriptures record for us, was the second king of Israel. My guess is that if you grew up in church, or maybe you just watched a lot of TV growing up, probably got some ideas about David's basic biography. I mean, he was set aside as a future king early in life, and then he got himself in big trouble as an adulterer. And then eventually, even more trouble, as a murderer. I mean, he definitely had a pretty complicated life. But all of those complications aside, you know what aspect of David's life has had the biggest impact on me? It's his ability to talk with his Creator with embarrassing honesty. I mean, there's this collection of songs and poetry about halfway through your Bible. It's called the Psalms. And if you think about them for what they really are, I mean, they really are a creative diary that chronicles the daily prayers and the reflections of one of the most powerful and emotional people that we see anywhere in Scripture. When you think about them like that, there's a whole world waiting to open up for you and I in the Psalms. Now, we don't have time, so I'm not going to read the whole thing this morning, but I do want to take just a look at one quick example today. And then what I would really encourage you to do is to take some time to explore them more on your own. Today, I just want to tell you a little bit about what's written in Psalm 143. Here's some of what David admits. He admits that he's crushed to the ground and that he's dwelling in darkness. He admits to God that his spirit is faint and that his heart is dismayed. And then he compares himself to a part of land that's so dry that it's literally cracked open. And then he turns around, and this is unbelievable. He turns around and he specifically asks God, "Why am I not getting any answers from you?" Doesn't sound like songs and poetry, does it? It sounds a lot more like a child that's begging for its life. And you know what? I actually find that really refreshing. David's desperate. He doesn't have the energy left to pray all the right words in the right order. Honestly, he knows that's not the way it works anyways. And when he can't seem to deal with a specific thought or with an emotion he's having, he's just honest with God about it. like 100% honest about it. That tells me that there's no need for us to pretend with God. In fact, Jesus addresses this very issue specifically in the New Testament on multiple occasions. In fact, on one particular evening during this incredibly large party in which all kinds of people were gathered, Jesus made his thoughts on this subject really, really clear, like painfully clear to one particular group of people. At the party, he was cornered and he was questioned by some people who were called Pharisees. Now, if you're unfamiliar, the Pharisees were the religious elite of the day. They only hung out with themselves and they loved to pretend that they were fine. And they loved to pretend that everything was good and that if you weren't like them, well, you weren't good and you had a problem. So at this party, they asked Jesus, why in the world would he hang out and even befriend people who were so obviously not fine? People who in their minds were, well, sick. And I love the response that Jesus gives because it is just dripping with disdain for these Pharisees and for their closed-minded approach to life. Listen to what Jesus says to them. Remember, this isn't a party, so try to get your mind around this. He's backed into a corner. They've asked him this question. Jesus looked at them and he said, healthy people? Healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. I have come to call, listen to this, not those who think they are righteous, but those who know they are not. In other words, Jesus was saying, oh, you think I'm at this party because of you? No, I got news for you. I'm here to be with all the people who are willing to admit they're sick, not those of you who want to pretend you're healthy and that everything's fine. I'm here so that they will know it's safe to drop the charade of righteousness that you hold on to. And I'm also here so that you will know that God isn't looking for or pleased by your self-sufficiency. You know what I think? I think God isn't looking for perfect people. I actually don't believe God is even interested in perfect. You know why? Perfect people don't need Jesus. Jesus came for people who are willing to admit that they don't have it all together. He came for people that aren't perfect and people that know that they can't make it on their own. In fact, those are the only people who can actually experience his presence anyways. The Pharisees, well, they missed the whole point of who Jesus was and who he came to save. The Pharisees were so caught up in their world of perfection that they couldn't even experience the hope and the freedom that can really only be found in the presence of Jesus. And you know what's worse? Their striving, their pretending, it actually kept others from experiencing the true presence of Jesus as well. So why do we do the same thing to ourselves and to one another? I mean, if leaning into and being honest with God is not only an open invitation that's extended to every single one of us, but it's also the path towards this hope that we all really want to experience, then why is it so hard for us to do that? Especially if we know on an intellectual level that nobody's really thriving right now and nobody's loving everything about their life. Why do I find it so difficult to be 100% honest with a God who I believe already knows what I'm going through and he already knows how I feel about it? Well, truthfully, there are probably as many answers to this as there really are people. So what I want to do for just a few minutes is I want to tell you a couple of the things that are true for me. And maybe as you hear what's true for me, maybe you'll be able to relate as well. When it comes to being honest with God, I've noticed two tensions that I feel all the time. The first is simple self-defense. It really feels like if I get really honest and open, then the floodgates of sadness or frustration, like they may never get closed again. Or worse, that I'll have to fully feel all those disappointing emotions that I've been doing such a great job of avoiding. Frankly, it just seems easier to put on some sort of prayer performance than to honestly admit, God, I feel like you've let me down this time. My guess is that even if you wouldn't consider yourself a follower of Jesus, I can imagine that you can relate to this. To let it all spill out is really in some ways to admit defeat. It's to admit that something is getting the better of us. Especially that's hard to do if you're struggling to believe that God exists or that if he does exist, that he's actually a good God. But there's another tension I feel, and it's this one. It's there's something inside of me that struggles to admit that I don't have it all together and that I may not actually be able to live up to all those cultural and religious expectations that we put on ourselves to be perfect. I don't know if you can connect with that, but I feel that way all the time. And what makes it tough is that we talk all the time about how this message of Jesus is one of grace. It's this story of God seeking out people with no hope. Yet there's some pride that lives deep down inside of me that really, it makes me want to avoid admitting that grace is what I need most right now. Because here's the thing, like if I can't get it all together on my own, then all I can do is trust that there is this God who knows everything about me and that he is good and that he accepts me just as I am. And that requires quite a bit of faith. And it requires me to surrender control. And that's something that's really hard for me to do. But here's what I want to encourage you with. If you're struggling to be honest with God, I want you to know there is so much peace and there is so much freedom waiting to be found in honestly reconciling with what we know to be true. You will feel this enormous burden lifted off of you when you start to pray whatever's on your mind, admitting your weaknesses, but believing that God's acceptance of you doesn't depend upon your ability to say the right words or experience the right emotions. Because here's the thing, bad things, they feel bad. Pain hurts, and that's okay. So come on, let's stop trying to please God. This week, I want to encourage you to take just a couple of minutes once a day in prayer, just to simply say whatever is on your mind to God, to find some words to express whatever it is that's really, really, really in your heart, like down deep in your heart. Now, I know for many of you, you've never prayed before. And if you've never prayed, if you've never talked to God before, that can seem kind of weird at first. So if you feel weird or you aren't sure what to say or how long it should take or what you should think, just start there. Just tell him. Just be honest. Use this time to start allowing those walls that we all build to try and protect our heart to come down so that you can experience, maybe for the very first time, the power of the presence of God in your life. Jesus shows us and he tells us that it's okay for us not to be okay. And that when we're honest about that with ourselves and with him, we can finally and fully start to experience the hope and the comfort and the healing that God wants to bring us in some of our darkest, darkest times. Now, before we wrap up, since we're talking about being honest, I want to be 100% honest with you for just a moment. A few minutes ago, I said this was a simple strategy, but not an easy one. Now, here's why I said that. I think every single one of us understands that when we're not okay, what we want more than anything is to know that even when we're not, we're still okay with those who matter the most to us. And I think one more reason why we're so hesitant to be honest with God is because we tried it before. And nothing happened. We tried it and we still weren't okay. And when that happened, it felt like God wasn't okay with us. It felt like God didn't care. And if that's you, I want you to know I can totally relate. I have been in that place so many times myself, more times than I care to admit. But here's the thing, being honest with God, it's not magic. It doesn't mean all of a sudden everything will change and the birds will start singing and the sky's gonna get bluer and all of a sudden hope's just gonna flood into your life and everything bad that's ever happened is all of a sudden gonna make sense again and you'll just feel perfect. That's not what this is about. That's certainly not how faith works. What it does mean though, is that when you get honest with God, it means you finally come to that place where you're admitting that you'd rather experience the closeness and presence of God in your life than keep up this false pretense that you're okay. It means that even in the midst of your pain, that even if the pain doesn't ever go away, it means that you've come to the place where his presence is better than going it alone. Here's the thing I want you to understand. He knows that it's already taking all that you've got just to keep it together. He's aware that you think you are too far gone. He is simply waiting for you to hand it all over to him so that he can finally show you that hope, well, hope is never lost, and that you don't have to hold it all alone, that you and I never know what tomorrow holds, and that ultimately, he wants us to know because of his great love, we are going to be okay. Really.
I know it's all you've got to just be strong. And it's a fight just to keep it together, together. I know you think that you are too far gone, but hope is never lost. Hope is never lost. Hold on, don't let go. Hey, hold on, don't let go. And just take one step closer. Put one foot in front of the other. You'll get through this. Just follow the light in the darkness. You're gonna be okay. Heavy from those nights, but just remember that you are a fighter, a fighter. You never know just what tomorrow holds, and you're stronger than you know. You're so much stronger than you know. So hold on and don't let go. Hey, hold on, don't let go. And just take one step closer. Put one foot in front of the other. You'll get through this. Just follow the light in the darkness. One step closer, put one foot in front of the other. You'll get through this. Just follow the light in the darkness. You're gonna be okay. Yeah. And when the night is closing in, don't give up. Don't give in. This won't last. It's not the end. It's not the end. You're gonna be okay. When the night is closing in, don't give up and don't give in. This won't last. It's not the end. It's not the end. You're gonna be okay.
Well, in the time that we have left, I want to introduce you to someone from right here at Decatur City Church who has a lot of experience and insight when it comes to what we've been talking about. Wendy Nunnery is a local author living in Decatur. She and her husband, Pierce, have been involved at Decatur City for years, along with their two kids. Her new book is called Good Enough, Learning to Let Go of Perfect for the Sake of Holy. So, Wendy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really been looking forward to this conversation.
Oh, me too. I've been looking forward to getting the opportunity to sit down with you and talk about this. So I kind of want to jump in. This book, Good Enough, it represents really a whole journey for you. It feels honestly like your life story in some ways. So could you take us back to the beginning of the journey and how that started and what faith looked like for you?
Sure. Well, I grew up in a small southern town. And like a lot of people who grew up in that environment, the concept of God and Jesus and faith were really familiar to me from a very young age. Both my parents were believers, but my dad especially was very devout, and he made it a high priority to share his faith with us. And Alongside that, though, I was growing up in this culture in the 90s that was very performative. What would Jesus do? Purity culture. And that informed the way that I saw myself and the way that I saw God. Though I loved God very deeply, I thought that my goodness was something separate from him that I had to do on my own, because in my mind, he was a loving parent, like my parents were, but he was waiting on me to mess up. And it wasn't until I got into my 20s and I started dealing with having intrusive thoughts and struggling with my mental health, but not knowing at the time that that was undiagnosed obsessive compulsive disorder, that I had to really rethink what I had believed about God and myself up to that point.
Sure. Those thoughts can be so damaging to our faith, and we're gonna dive into that a little bit more in a minute. But one of the things I love about your story is that even though it's unique to you, I think there's so many threads that all of us can connect with and can relate to. And I think especially for those of us who consider ourselves Christ followers, it can be especially hard to kind of raise our hand and admit that things are hard and we're not doing very good. So how did you finally come to that place where you could admit, hey, things aren't going that great?
It was tough, because I think that when I first started having those intrusive thoughts and realizing that something was going on, I thought that it was me who had just suddenly gone from good to bad. Because when you grow up with this mindset, when your faith tradition tells you that if you do this, then God will do this, when things go wrong, it's hard not to automatically assume that that's the result of your own sin and not just your own humanity. And being a human and living in a world that's broken, I mean, we know what that's like right now, to be doing the very best that you can, but things are still going wrong. And so for a season of time, I kept a lot of that to myself. So I automatically assumed that everything that was coming into my head was because I had done something wrong. So there was a lot of time spent talking to God about needing his forgiveness, asking him to make that right, asking him to help me understand it. It was still very much a, I think I have to earn something from you, God, versus I can bring this to you and trust that you're going to help me walk through it with wisdom and grace and love, not just, you know, for everybody else around me and not understanding what's going on, but for myself, most of all.
It can be so hard to let go of some of those honestly, just wicked thoughts that hold us back and keep us from moving forward and keep us from being honest with God. But once we get honest with God, it's also, we've talked a lot about this today, it can be hard to raise our hands and admit to other people that things aren't going well. I mean, what was it like for you in your story when you finally raised your hand and said, hey, I'm not doing good right now?
Well, there's a couple of things that I can think about. There's a couple of seasons that were really hard for me when I learned that I had OCD and would recognize that, oh, okay, so these thoughts that I'm having are actually obsessions, and those obsessions are centered on things that matter to me most. And at the time, of course, I had made goodness into such an idol. That was one of the things that mattered to me most, was my identity as being a good woman, a good person. So there was a season where I was struggling to be alone, and I started having this intrusive thought, like, what if I suddenly snap and do something terrible that I either can't remember, or worse, if I do it on purpose? So I would avoid being alone. And that's not sustainable behavior. But I would leave the house in the mornings when my husband left for work, and I would come home only when he got home. And finally, I just said, okay, I can't do this. I need some help. And I reached out to my small group, and I told them, I'm having a hard time. And one day I came home from work, and I was sitting in the driveway waiting on my husband to come home because I didn't want to go in. And I looked up and I saw a bouquet of sunflowers on the front porch, which are my favorite. And it was from one of the women in my small group. And then the next day there was another bouquet of flowers, and then another, and then another. And it went on for a whole week. And that was such a really powerful thing for me to see, that I could share and be vulnerable with a group of people who didn't have the mental illness that I did. They weren't struggling in the same way, but that they were willing to sort of bring me in and say, we love you and we're here for you and we're in this with you. And we want to give you that tangible reminder that it's okay for you to open up and talk about what's happening.
it's remarkable to think about how our stories connect with other people's stories and how really other people, God brings them into our lives at times when we need them, like your small group. And I think so much of your story, we can hear the journey. And that's a lot of what we've been talking about today throughout this morning, is that this idea of letting go of perfect, like it's not magic. It's not something that just happens instantaneously. It's really a process. And even coming to grips with the idea that we're not okay, like that alone doesn't make us okay. It's another part of the process. So what has this journey kind of looked like for you? What has this process been like?
I think one of the biggest things that I've had to come to terms with is that there are going to be things in my life that God is going to have to continue to teach me over and over and over. For me, it has been having a mental illness. It's not something that you process through once and then you're done. It's something that you live with. And I think about the year after my daughter was born, I struggled again with the same kind of obsession with being alone with her, because your obsessions kind of latch on to what it is that means the most to you. And as a parent, it's my children.
Sure.
So I was scared of being alone with her because I was afraid, you know, what if something happens? What if I do something wrong? And so I would avoid that. Again, not sustainable behavior. And I had to work through that with a counselor. And my husband was a huge support, as well as my small group and my family. We got through it. And then we decided that we were going to have another child. And at that point, things were great. I had worked through this. And then immediately after my son's birth in May of 2019, and on top of having OCD, I sank into a really severe and in some cases life-threatening postpartum depression. And I was so angry with God about that. I would stand here in this sanctuary and sob because I was so upset. I thought, I have been here before. I thought I was done with this. And here I am again. And not only do I feel like you're making me go through something that I'd already fixed, I'd already gotten right, but you seem like you're completely silent. I thought God was just gone. And that was devastating to me as somebody who'd walked through faith my whole life. One of the verses that I think I might have heard, I don't know, in church or with a friend, but it's when John is giving testimony about Jesus. And he says, for the one whom God sends speaks the word of God, and he gives the Spirit without limit. And that was what I saw happen in my life, was that God was not too big to show up in those small things that were helpful to me, like conversations with my husband, community with my small group, counseling sessions, anxiety medication. All of those things were so helpful for me. And what I've had to learn is that while I haven't experienced the full physical and mental healing that I wanted, what has been healed is the view that I had of God growing up, that he was just waiting on me to mess up. And so that's completely transformed my faith, because I was really good at following the rules and performing my religion, but I didn't know the person of Jesus, and now I do.
I love the way you put it in your book, and I want to read this because it's actually the subtitle of your book, that you're letting go of perfect for the sake of holy. Thanks so much for taking time out to sit down with us, talk with us. Thanks for just honestly being real with us. I think it's encouraging. I know it is to me. I'm sure it's encouraging to a lot of people to hear that we don't all have it together, and it's okay to not be perfect, and we don't have to pretend. So I can't wait to see what all happens through this book. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today, Wendy.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You guys can learn more about Wendy's book, Good Enough, at wendynunnery.com, or you can catch her podcast, So OCD, where she talks about living and learning to thrive with obsessive compulsive disorder. Wendy, thanks again for being here. I'm so grateful for you. I'm so thankful for your willingness to share a little bit about your story. Thanks so much. And thank you so much for joining us today. Please don't miss next week. I'm excited that we're going to get to hear from our friend Sherita Harkness about another important strategy for responding to that question. How are you? Really? I hope you have a great week, and we'll see you then.